This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
You're a parent, and you have a 16-year-old daughter who's out on a date, and she's an hour late getting home. Where are you?
In the basement.
You're in the basement. And we don't mean the basement like you're in the basement of your house.
No, not physically.
But you are mentally in the basement. You're in the part of your brain that sits on the bottom of your brain called the amygdala, which I'm sure I just butchered. Come on, you're the ex-medic. What's it called?
I don't know. I don't pronounce it either.
But you're in the basement. You're in the part of your brain that is about fight or flight.
Right.
Right? Yep. You're mad because your daughter's on a date and she's not home. And you're kind of mad at her, but you're going to strangle that guy.
Your stress hormone has peaked.
The stress hormone has peaked. So when we talk about this in the context of crisis management or dealing in a critical moment or situation, we're talking about that kind of moment of panic where you're confronted with this bad scenario that maybe you've thought about and maybe you haven't. But you've mentally just gone right down the drain to the basement.
Yeah, we call it going to lockout in a helicopter world.
In the going to lockout. Like, so yeah. You don't know what to do, you can't act?
No, so going to lockout is when you take the engine out of manual mode and you manually adjust the power setting, but it basically will scream at you.
Oh, it doesn't like that.
Bring it, but it's in an emergency, so you're using it to give yourself more power, right?
Gotcha.
But we talk about that a lot. Oh, they went straight to lockout because they're straight to like high speed mode.
Interesting. I hadn't heard that, but yeah. I think it's the same analogy.
Yeah.
So we use this description. There's a group at Harvard University in the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative Program, which I'm an alumni of from 5 years ago now. But Dr. Lenny Marcus and Barry Doran have spent most of the last decade and some since 9/11 really understanding how leaders operate in a crisis and how they lead through difficult situations. And they created this concept of meta leadership. And there's some dimensions to that about how you lead in a crisis effectively and be able to move a situation forward towards a resolution. And part of this is just part of what they've learned is just this mental piece of how do leaders keep their thinking out of the basement? And what happens when the leader goes to the basement?
Yeah.
And how do you recognize that? Mm-hmm. That's what we want to talk about for a little bit today.
Yeah.
So maybe we start with how do you keep yourself from going to the basement? How do you keep yourself from going into lockout?
Well, first you have to recognize that that's where you're heading. You're walking down the stairs right now.
I'm going.
This is happening.
The basement door is open and I'm headed down the creepy stairs.
Yeah, right down the stairs to the basement. So I think you have to recognize what kinds of things are going to trigger that response for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you know that that's ultimately that's happening and you can recognize that that's happening, then you can bring yourself back. You can pull yourself out of lockout and walk back up the stairs.
Walking down the stairs, walking up the stairs.
Yeah.
I remember a moment though during, we've talked before about an active shooter situation that we went through at our previous employer and it lasted, I don't know, 4 hours maybe beginning to end. But I remember a moment where I was headed down that path.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
briefly. Well, there was a moment where I was, how do I describe this without giving away things I shouldn't be talking about? There was a moment where I was asked to post something internally on like this internal Twitter-like thing that employer had at the time. So I did post this update, and then there were some questions that came in. And, you know, when you're in the middle of the crisis, is not the time to be questioning the crisis.
Right.
And what I mean by that is like there were some pretty critical comments being posted about communication and the, you know, lack of a mass notification tool and some things. And it was a fair criticism, but doing it in the middle of things when people's lives were on the line and the police were in harm's way dealing with this situation was not the time to do that. And I had about 30 seconds where I was like, I'm going to reach through the computer and I'm going to strangle this individual because this is not the time.
Yeah. And I mean, I think ultimately that's really a good point. So when you are, or others are heading down into the basement, that's a good time to go back to your training.
Mm-hmm. I was going.
You used to climb back up the stairs and remember that you've been trained and you have to manage the crisis as it's presented to you.
Right.
So you don't sharpshoot what could happen or what maybe did already happen. It's managing it as it's coming to you at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's trusting your training, managing through it with the plans that you have in place and the decision-making skills that you have been provided by your leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there was this conversation in my head, right, where I went from I'm going to reach through the computer to, wait a minute, I'm overseeing. I wasn't the incident leader, but I was standing next to the incident leader, and she worked for me. And I just kind of went through this in my head of, okay, I got to keep myself up here.
Yeah.
You can't see me here on the podcast, but my hand is up here and I'm showing a level and I need to keep my head up here not in the basement.
He's
I'm on the second floor of the house.
Trying to keep himself on the second floor so he can oversee, right?
But you're right in that, okay, look, I'd been there before. I'd been through other active shooter situations that I had led or been involved in. I had been trained. I had taught this idea of the basement numerous times and I knew that I had the emotional intelligence to handle the situation, but I still wanted to go in the basement for a few minutes.
So it's important to recognize your own.
You've got to know what's going to trigger it.
That's
and
right.
For me, it was, hey people, wait till this is over, because my only concern right now is getting 1200 people and the police out of that building without harm.
Right.
We'll worry about the rest later.
And it's important to kind of sift out that minutia too, because what they're saying does not matter right now, you know? So it's understanding what comments actually do matter right now in the moment. And then the rest of it we'll have to deal with later.
So what do we do when we're working with somebody and they're headed down the creepy stairs?
Nobody's ever had to deal with somebody who was who was in the basement, who was in lockout. No one's ever had to do that, right?
I remember a story from a friend of mine who is a retired law enforcement official from the Midwest who led numerous kind of high intensity situations. And I think I've told this story in the podcast before. There was a lieutenant that they were bringing along in the department to really be his backfill as the critical incident leader as a future career move. And during a major incident that occurred more than 10 years ago now, this individual completely freaked out at the scene of an incident in the command post, was totally in the basement, and they removed him because there was nothing else to do. Like, we have to just get him, like go home.
Right.
I think is literally what they told.
Well,
like, you got to go.
Sometimes that is the answer.
And this was more of a mismatch. Like, he just did not have the emotional intelligence and maturity to be able to lead a group through this situation. But he also was so far gone into the basement that there was really no salvaging. But you can catch people on the crickety stairs going into the basement.
Well, and sometimes I think it's, you can see them as they're walking down the stairs and try to pull them out. Maybe they just need a break. I mean, we saw this a lot when I was in AirVac. I remember one time I had a nurse. This is at the height of the war. We were dealing with a lot of patient numbers and it was very stressful for everyone. And she was in charge of the whole crew. So she was not only in charge of all of, you know, this whole crew of people, but she was in charge of the patient care for many, many patients at one time. So that's very stressful, right? But she had a tendency to start inching down those stairs frequently, and she had we had to, on a couple of times, sort of remove her from the situation and then bring her back in. So it wasn't like she was permanently removed, but it would get, the stress level would get to a certain point where anyone would be susceptible to that. So, you know, I think it's just watching out for people. And also, if you're working with a team that you know well, it's easy to recognize their signs as well as your own.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me that part of what I think happens, particularly in longer term crisis situations, is we forget that people have to have rest and they have to have an opportunity to walk away from what's going on and kind of rejuvenate, not just mentally, but physically, in order to come back and do this again tomorrow or in 2 days. I think we think about this sometimes as like there's this big critical moment and I'm the crisis manager, so therefore I have to be there all the time. And that's not really true. If you have built the team correctly, even if you're a one-person operation, you have counterparts in other parts of the organization who should be able to run the incident and allow you to disconnect. Because if it's a 1 or 2 day situation, then probably no big deal.
Right.
But during Katrina, for example, I was activated for 49 days at a business. People at FEMA were activated for 90 plus and deployed. I talked to a friend of mine at FEMA last night who has not been home in almost 120 days, who is currently in Puerto Rico.
I believe it.
Because I was attempting to meet with him next week, and guess what? That is not happening.
No, no. And how exhausting, right? I mean, no one can sustain that.
Well, I think he gets some time off. I think he gets a break, right? You're in it. I mean, he's in San Juan. Yep. He's not going to get away from that situation.
So when you're in it and you're swallowed up by the basement, if you will, the poltergeist, it's super easy to get stuck in there or to make frequent trips to the basement if you're not careful.
Right.
So I think it's some of that has to do with the preparation for yourself, the preparation for your team, getting to know your team and trusting each other.
And then after the incident's over, I think, you know, we talk about the after action process in terms of, you know, what went well and what didn't and what steps do we want to take. But there's an after action process for people, I think, coming out of this too, whether it's counseling or group discussion. I mean, sometimes it's just the discussion of, look, here's 4 or 5 people I went through this with, and we're going to talk about how we all dealt with this, because there's an emotional aspect to that. The after shooter situation that I was describing earlier, when that was, when we got the all clear from the police and we knew everybody was okay, I had to leave the room because I had an emotional reaction to that, because I was worried. I was convinced that people had died.
Yeah.
And nobody did.
Well, I think everyone kind of went in their separate corners for a little bit after that situation.
And then we hot washed.
And then we hot washed. So we've talked about this before. We did an initial immediate hot wash, and then we did some more long-term discussions with folks about that, which are sometimes also difficult conversations to have when we've made a slew of mistakes, or when
we
need to rectify some plans and things like that. And so you can see people going into the basement too when they're being judged and criticized. But I think that's part of remembering that you're not personally being judged and criticized. It's your training, it's the plans, it's the preparation that's being criticized.
And you want to be better, and that causes that.
Yep.
I do think another aspect of staying out of the basement and being effective about this is how you exercise. How do you practice what's in your plans to do? Because the more realistic, the more nonlinear, the more stressful the practice is, the easier this becomes in terms of making decisions and dealing with the emotional aftermath of those decisions and being able to work through that.
Yeah. I think in exercises too, you can get a glimpse of how people will respond in those stressful situations. Mm-hmm. If they've never been placed in a situation of stress, they themselves are not necessarily going to know what their reaction is going to be like.
The goal out of all of this is to stay out of the basement, recognize when you're headed into the basement and when others are headed there, and how you can help stop their path down the creepy, crickety stairs towards the poltergeist, as you said.
There's scary things in basements. Scary things are in, okay?
Yes, scary things are in basements in movies. So you want to stay out of there as best you can, but helping people understand that they're headed there, or recognizing that you are headed there, and bring yourself back up to the first or second floor of that house is where you want to be an effective leader.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BRYGHTPATH.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.